Thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings from Faith Radio. Good morning. It is Monday morning, the 2nd of July. The sun is up and the tomb is empty, and that's good news indeed, because that is one of the central realities of our Christian faith, is that that tomb is empty, and it does mean in the troubles and travails of this life that I think we all share as believers, just trying to walk out this journey, parents and confused so often by headlines and older people, younger people, there's just a lot to navigate in this world. And so in all of the uncertainty of that, what we know for sure is that our Savior lives and death has been beaten. So there is always hope and always future in his beautiful kingdom. You're listening to Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Capster, joined by Logan Roush and Paul Perreault, along with Rachel Sutton as part of the morning show team with the great guests. And we had last hour, we wrapped up with Adam Carrington, Logan, and he really inspired us to look a bit closer at the Declaration of Independence, because he reads it every July 4th. We just thought that was phenomenal. And we realized we didn't even know for sure how it started again. We couldn't remember. And so here's the starting point, Logan. We're going to do a little education this morning. It says, when in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with one another and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and equal station to which the laws of nature and nature's God entitle them. And it goes on from there.
It's coming back to me.
Right? It came right back to me too. And it's this beautiful language. I mean, they wrote so beautifully at that time. And in comparison, I've seen over the last like 8-10 years as students have turned in papers, we've kind of all gotten dumbed down by texting and by social media posts. I literally sometimes will see almost text messages in my papers, incomplete sentences. I'm kind of guilty, I would say, of some of these things myself.
There isn't a line in the Declaration that just says, you are the worst, Britain,
And there's no emojis there. There's no slapping of the forehead emojis. Hmm. There's no communication through characters. They really had this beautiful, poetic language that drew us into the enormity of this moment, of this freedom from Great Britain and some of what had happened then.
Well, we say that, and it was beautiful. I mean, the founders were brilliant, and they were all incredibly educated people, and you do want to be part of that incredible writing, but you know, I can't get more than about 3 or 4 sentences before I feel really too dumb to continue.
Yeah, there's an attention span issue. I think my attention span's gotten down to about, you know, maybe 13th of a second these days, you know, with the whole phone thing. I will say this, that when we lived overseas in Scotland, it took me a little bit to realize that July 4th was probably not going to be celebrated while we were there. We got to the 4th, I was ready for fireworks and all of the, you know, the smorgasbord that's there, and nobody in Scotland was celebrating the independence of America from the UK.
That's got to be a shock to the system, though.
Yeah.
Was it still National Cheat Day? Was it still okay to eat an infinite amount of hamburgers and hot dogs?
You know, it was. And I will say, in fairness, we were on the Isle of Wight one day, and the host family that was there, they were amazing. They welcomed us with American flag napkins. They didn't know how to make burgers, but she gave it this amazing shot, and they were incredible. So it was typical British hospitality, right? I mean, they're so good at thinking about the other. Well, say it's 7 minutes past the hour. We're going to take a short break, and really excited. We had a chance to talk with Leith Anderson last week, who is a pastor of Wooddale Church here in the Twin Cities of St. Paul in Minneapolis. He is now the president of the National Association of Evangelicals. We have a big prayer day coming up next Sunday for all of our churches around the country, and he talks about the power of prayer. He also talks about the importance of leaving behind a financial health for future generations. You're not going to want to miss it. Good morning. It's Faith Radio Mornings, and I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner, and we are joined on the line, and I'm thrilled to say, by somebody that I've admired from afar and now get to talk to in person. It is Leith Anderson, who is the president of the National Association of Evangelicals. Leith, thanks for joining us this morning.
Hey, Peter. Great to be with you today.
So I'd be curious, before we get into some of the topics that are top of the mind for evangelicals, including a prayer Sunday that's coming up and some conversations around the debt, if I have this correct, you started ministry at a church called Wooddale in Eden Prairie, Minnesota in about 1977. Is that right?
Hey, it was January 1, 1977. So, started at a moment after midnight officially.
Crazy. And obviously you presided over a pretty significantly growing church, a lot of evangelicals, and even the rise of evangelicalism in our country. What are some of the things that have really shifted in the last 40-ish or so years from when you started on that January date to where we are now, just conversations we're having, different dimensions of culture? What have you noticed over these years?
Evangelicalism has exploded in that time period, if you go back a generation or two or the earlier part of the last century, evangelicals were kind of on the margins of society and in this past generation moved to the center and have become a significant force, have grown explosively in the United States but around the world in just exceptional numbers. So that's, of course, one of the biggest changes. And then the enormous diversity. Sometimes people don't realize that for instance, in the United States, 44% of African Americans are evangelicals, 30% of Hispanic Americans are evangelicals, 29% of white Americans are evangelicals. So the largest percentage of evangelicals in terms of those groups are among minority groups, not majority groups. And I mean, it's been an amazing time. But there's a lot of diversity, and that means there's polarization as well.
And I think some people are lamenting maybe even the lack of influence of the church. But from your angle, obviously a lot of our country's conversation is still being driven by faith at this point. Is that what you're seeing from where you're at?
It is. And unfortunately, people sometimes gravitate to the bad news and they look for a statistic that is kind of negative. Unfortunately, sometimes that's a fundraising mechanism. But the reality is that we have amazing churches across America that are not focused on politics, they're not focused on some of the issues that people think are what evangelicals are all about. What evangelicals are about is the gospel of Jesus Christ, and churches and individuals are doing their job, being faithful to the Great Commandment and the Great Commission.
That's great. So, Elith, I know coming up is one of the gatherings on a Sunday that you're inviting churches around the country to, and that's on July 8th. We have Pray Together Sunday, and it really is this invitation to, across all of our denominational spectrums and divides, that churches around the country would gather to pray for spiritual renewal in our country. Just kind of talk us through the hopes and the passion you have for this.
The National Association of Evangelicals, which is the largest evangelical umbrella organization in the United States, launched this a few years ago, and it was, I think, originally just we were going to do it for 1 year, and it was so well received, decided to make it an annual event, normally on the second Sunday of July, and it's asking churches to set aside a few minutes in their service to pray together. And they do it in different ways. Some may do it in cluster groups. Others may do it with someone up front or having times of silence or lists. They can do it any way they want. By the way, there are resources on this at our website, nae.net. And they're free, and they're available. And it's just saying, pray for our community, pray for our nation, pray for one another in a special way. You know, Peter, I have a friend who is facing some significant surgery, and I've talked to him several times in anticipation of that in the last few weeks. And one of the things he's repeatedly said to me is, oh, I have people who are praying for me, and he tells about his church, he tells about his family. And he said that to me a number of times. There's something special about knowing that multiple groups about the same time are praying about the same things. Mm. And what we're asking is a Pray Together Sunday when churches across America will let us know if they will. They can sign up at nae.net. Just let us know that they're praying for their community and their country.
It's Leith Anderson. He's the president of the National Association of Evangelicals. Glad you mentioned the website. Again, nae.net. And there's resources there to just sort of help walk through what it means to pray together on a Sunday. Leith, I'd be curious, just even from the biblical text, you mentioned your friend experiencing the power of prayer. What do we see in the scriptures about the invitation to pray and the power that it has, because I think even some of the students that I teach from time to time, they question whether prayer even matters. What do we see?
Of course, the essence of prayer is not what we are asking for. The essence of prayer is a relationship with God through Jesus Christ. Mm. And the relationship itself is worth it, independent of the request that we make or the answer that we get. But the Bible continually talks to us about prayer, invites us to pray, and gives loads of prayers and what the results and the outcomes were. And at least for me, it's rooted in the belief that Jesus Christ really makes a difference in our world and in our life. And it is that presupposition, it is that faith that calls us to pray. It's, you know, and Peter, I think we see this most when we face the challenges and the crises. And I'll tell you candidly, when I'm up against something, I'm far more likely to passionately pray than I am on an easygoing day.
Yeah, it's funny, right, in terms of just we do tend to pray when there's need as opposed to just being in that ongoing relationship with God. I think there's really an anchoring for us in the days when we're just in this interactive relationship. I think about Dallas Willard saying that prayer is as simple as just talking with God about our day, right?
It's conversation. And as you and I talk together now and as we talk to family members and others, we ought to be prioritizing talking to God.
That's great. It's Leith Anderson, the president of National Association of Evangelicals. We'll take a short break, and Leith, when we come back, there's some other top-of-the-mind things that you're invested in right now, and that has to do with the national debt and the future and what we're leaving behind as in our generations for that which is to come and the importance of stewardship of that. So we'll take a short break. Be right back on Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner. We're back on Faith Radio Mornings, and I'm joined by Leith Anderson, who was a longtime pastor of a church in the Minneapolis area and is now the president of the National Association for Evangelicals. And Leith, what does that mean? What do you do day in, day out with your role in this presidency?
Well, I can take all of our time to tell you about the NAE. 75 years old. We have 40 member denominations and loads of Christian organizations across America. So we're talking millions of people and a voice for evangelicalism. So basically what we do is convene evangelicals together and speak for evangelicals in America. And what do I do? Well, as the CEO of the organization, we have faith and church issues, things like helping clergy finances. That's one of our major projects right now. We endorse chaplains to the United States military. We have an office in Washington, D.C., and we relate to government. And we have a humanitarian arm, which is called World Relief. And those are the things that we're engaged in, and every one of them has subsets to it as well.
Mm. And so much of what you're talking about is bringing the church into our headlines, into our daily life of people. Talk a little bit. Sometimes I think growing up, evangelicals, got this maybe generalization, unfortunately, that they sort of sat behind the walls and they sang kumbaya together and weren't interested or invested in the things in our world. But that really is a generalization that doesn't hold up when you look at the actual practice.
Oh, absolutely not. I mean, look at the missionaries that we send around the world and what they've done. Just reading sort of an academic journal, but talks about how missionaries have been a primary source of democracy around the world, that where missionaries have gone, democracy has flourished. So the gospel has been advanced, but government has been much more effective as well. And that's what evangelical Christians do. We really care about the good news of Jesus Christ, and that means, number one, salvation, but it also talks about how we engage in the public square and how we relate to one another.
Mm. And to that end, some of the conversation you've been having recently has to do with concern over the just exploding debt that we have in our country and what it is that we're called to and to be responsible for in terms of what we leave behind for the next generation. So talk us through what you're seeing and some of the indications among leadership about what they want to see moving forward relative to the debt.
Well, a quick word of explanation. Every month we do what is called the Evangelical Leaders Survey, and we survey evangelical leaders across America on a different question every month, and then that information is publicly released. So in May of 2018, our question was, which options would you support to reduce the debt burden on future generations? And it's talking about federal debt. And what we got was a response that said that 70% of our respondents said that we should do both. We should reduce spending and we should increase revenue. 4% said increase revenues. 26% said just reduce spending. And what it's saying is we've got a problem here, a really significant problem in terms of burgeoning public debt. Our federal budget has grown by over $500 billion just in the last couple of years, well over $4 trillion now. But the challenge is what this means for future generations and what we're going to do about it. So evangelicals care. We care not just about how we live today, but how our children and grandchildren are going to live and what the difference is going to make in future generations.
It's really one of the primary calls, right? I mean, that this life is not our own. It's been bought with a price. And so we serve in the kingdom that is relative to just the always future unfolding, and we're stewards of that. And I have Logan Rausch in studio who runs the board, but he also participates with me on the show quite often. And Logan is 22 years old. And Logan, when you hear this opportunity that there's a focus and an emphasis that you aren't just dumped upon, you know, with decisions made now that only benefit existing generations, I mean, does this give you some sense of hope relative to future?
Yeah, you know, I see my parents, or at least a lot of my age, see your parents growing up with, you know, balancing 7 credit cards and doing things like that. And that can be really frightening of an idea to try to jump into. And so when I look toward the future, I do want to see this security, and I do want to see this plan for the future. There seems to be way too much living in the moment, whether it be financially, spiritually, or whatever it be. And that's a mentality I really think we're hesitant to get into. Right now, when we're 20-something, sure, whatever. But later on, yeah, we do want to plan for the future.
Yeah, and so, Leith, what are some steps that you're seeing that we could just, as a country, take tangibly to help reduce that debt load for the next generations like Logan?
Well, let me just pick up on what Logan just said about parents that have 7 or 8 credit cards and accumulate debt. In our country, the way it works, if your parents, your grandparents have credit card bills and they die, the debts die with them. But that's not the way the country works. Imagine if your grandparents' credit card bills all came to you and that you had to pay off their debt before you could go ahead with the things in your life. So what the national debt does is it passes it on to future generations. What should we do about it? Well, there are a couple of challenges. One is we've got to rein in spending, and the other is we've got to look at revenue. And unfortunately, we have people that just want to do one or the other, and convincingly, it's a combination of doing both. And this is not an easy thing to do. So what politicians have done is sort of punted down the generation to the future.
Hmm. And Leith, in your position, do you have the ability to sort of have some pull and get into conversations with legislators to really push this ball forward and say, hey, look, we can't keep ignoring this issue. We really need to move into it.
We do, because we have access to members of Congress and others who are in the government. But they're stymied oftentimes by the current politics, and it's challenging to get people to take action on it, especially when there are competing constituencies. And that's why we need courageous leaders who are going to say, we're going to do something that is challenging and maybe even really difficult in our generation, in order to take our blessings and give the blessings to the next generation and not the debts.
Hmm. Leith, as we wrap up our time, I'd be curious just kind of sort of go off of these topics for just a minute. Again, you've been in ministry for a number of years, and what I really appreciate is the staying power that you've had. It's not always the case, and I'm with friends of mine that we talk about what it means to finish well in the kingdom. What are some things for you that have been part of your own journey and struggles and triumphs and all of that, that is just part of an ability to finish well and walk out this race all the way to the end?
Sometimes as leaders or as a pastor or a professor, there's a tendency to identify ourselves as a pastor, a professor, or a leader. I would say for me, and I hope for others as well, that's not my identity. That's not who I am. Who I am is as a Christian. I'm a follower of Jesus Christ, and there may be a time in my life when I have a certain role and not another, but what I need to be faithful to is Jesus Christ as my Savior and Lord, and then that is expressed through what may be a position or a job. And I think that type of prioritization and that type of theology enables us to faithfully serve Jesus Christ in whatever the context may be.
It's Leith Anderson, the president for the National Association of Evangelicals. Leith, where can we go again to find more information about the upcoming Sunday power, the prayer on Sunday, as well as what's happening now with the debt?
It's time to memorize.
We got it.
NAE.net.
NAE.net. Leith, thanks for taking the
time.
And yeah, it's great. It's a great site. It's a great resource. We really appreciate it. And thanks for taking the time this morning to walk us through these issues. The wisdom is very helpful.
Good conversation. Thank you and blessings.
Great. We'll be back in just a minute after a short break.
Some people, when they watch a baseball game, see a ball being thrown and hit. Others see curveballs, splitters, batting stances, and swing trajectories. And it's interesting. The deeper your understanding, the more meaningful it all becomes. Welcome to Faith Radio, where we believe that understanding the Bible on a deep level opens up a whole new world to greater peace, love, joy, and purpose. And there's no greater pastime than that, young or old. Connecting faith to life. Faith Radio.
Have you ever wished you could listen to your favorite radio program when you wanted to? That way you'd never miss a program you really wanted to hear, simply because your program came on when you had an appointment, you were at work, or something urgent came up. Well, you can listen to your favorite programs whenever you want. Download the Faith Radio app by searching Faith Radio in the Apple Store or Google Play Store. Podcasts of your favorite program are now available on iTunes and Google Play Music app. Search and subscribe to your favorite program and listen anytime.
You know, Logan, we got a big event coming up here locally. It is the Northwestern Christian Writers Conference. This is the second year that we've held that event, and the registration deadline is July 5th. We already have 500 or more registrants for this conference. It is, if you are an author, if you want to be an author, if you want to learn how to write Christian literature and some of the great stories, you know, I'm a huge Narnia guy, and of course the underpinnings of that is our Christian faith. You can come to this conference and you'll be able to meet with authors, with faculty members that can help you take some next steps on the journey.
And you can be at any level, whether you're just putting together a few sheets of paper on ideas that you have, or you're ready to make a pitch for a book. If you need guidance and help to get you on that next step, this is where you want to go.
Absolutely. The event is July 13th and 14th at the University of Northwestern St. Paul. You can register at NorthwesternChristianWritersConference.com. That's NorthwesternChristianWritersConference.com. Certified financial planner Ken Franke is talking with us this morning about living on less than you earn.
You know, the Bible says in Proverbs 21, verse 20, I believe, in the house of the wise are stores of choice food and oil, but a foolish man devours all he has. And I think that is such a core verse, because if you do these things, you almost can't get in trouble. You live on less than you earn. People always think, I've got to make this amount of money or this amount of money, but our financial futures are more dependent on how much we spend rather than how much we earn. And so you see people who have very modest incomes, and over 20 years, they are much better off than people who have made much more money than they did, because those other people spent it all. And the person on the modest income saved a lot of it. So you live on less than you earn. If you live on less than you earn for long enough in this country, most people can become financially independent, but it's a choice that we make.
That's Ken Franke, certified financial planner. If you want to catch that entire segment, head to myfaithradio.com and search Biblical Finances. You'll find a great talk from Ken. We'll take a short break, and when we come back, we'll be joined by our national affairs correspondent, Dr. David Aikman. We'll talk about the Mexico elections as well as immigration all around our world. So stay with us. We'll be back in just a minute on Faith Radio Mornings.
Have many battles in your home? Are there bunkers built up throughout the house? Hi, I'm Mark Gregston with Parenting Today's Teens. You may find that the frequency and intensity of scuffles are increasing in your home. I'd encourage you to think about the hills you're dying on. What issues have the greatest consequences? What battles, if you lose, will also cause you to sacrifice a relationship? And what battles will eventually pass? Once you've answered these questions, adjust what you fight back about. Mom, Dad, choose your battles wisely and carefully. On the essential, non-negotiable stuff, don't budge one inch. On the non-essentials, show a little grace and mercy.
Mark Gregston is devoted to helping parents of struggling teens. Find his small group curricula online at parentingtodaysteens.org.
My name is Bond, James Bond.
And that sound, of course, represents the walk-up music of Dr. David Aikman, who handles all of our foreign affairs here on Faith Radio Mornings. And Dr. Aikman, I'm curious, you are a naturalized American citizen, but you are in Ireland right now. Do you plan on celebrating the 4th of July in some way in Ireland?
Indeed, I do. And there are Americans in my locality who also want to celebrate it. So I hope we can do something suitably festive because we're getting some nice weather here, and we'd like to do that.
Oh, that's great. Is there any shot at fireworks over in your neck of the woods, or how would you celebrate?
I don't think fireworks would be very popular at this time of year. They're only allowed in sort of national holiday times and New Year's Eve and so forth. So I don't think fireworks would be possible, but people do have barbecues over here, and somebody might have a barbecue on the 4th of July.
That's great. Boy, thanks for joining us again, as always. Talk us through some of the global events as our foreign affairs correspondent. And around here, obviously, and on the North American continent, there was pretty significant elections that took place to their neighbor to the south, that being Mexico, where there was a populist president elected. Again, we've just had a populist president elected in the United States these last couple of years. He's in Trump. But this was a different kind of populist. This was somebody who would be considered far more liberal than conservative. Kind of talk us through what happened this weekend.
Well, he's López Obrador, and he had run for president 3 years ago, 4 years ago, and didn't win and complained. He thought there'd been vote tampering, and he created quite a lot of trouble in Mexico by organizing demonstrations down the main thoroughfares of Mexico City, which, as you I'm sure know, is a very difficult place to drive around at the best of times. But he's also quite different from the other candidates in that he's significantly leftist. He believes in collectivist state-run solutions for many kinds of problems, both economic and political. And I think he's the most leftist-leaning Mexican president that we've had south of the border for perhaps even decades. You have to remember that Mexico went through a really revolutionary period in the 1920s and 30s when priests were locked up and Catholic churchgoers were arrested and so forth. So they do have a fairly bleak tradition of being revolutionary leftist. Obrador, the guy who's just been elected, he's referred to as AMLO, says that he's not going to do anything violent, that he's going to do it in what he calls the Mexican way. So we'll have to see how it all turns out.
And this is, it seems like it's part of a broader movement, momentum of populism, even globally, not just in the United States, not just in Mexico, but in Europe as well. There's been some populist momentum, and it's not specific to conservatism or liberalism. It really is about people that are tired of corruption within government. You're seeing it in Europe as well, right?
Oh, yes, of course. But in fact, there is a specific political coloration in Europe. Most of the recently elected sort of populist governments in Europe, in places like Austria, the Czech Republic, and Hungary, have been populists of a very conservative stripe, often referred to rather lazily as right-wing populists, which is not always an accurate definition. But in Central and South America, we've had populist elections with people from the left coming in. I mean, the obvious recent example is Hugo Chavez of Venezuela, whose successor, Maduro, is still president, and Venezuela has become basically a basket case after incredibly mishandled economic policies. And so I think there's a tendency around the world to have popular solutions, either of the left or the right, depending on who the existing government was that was overthrown. So I don't think this is unusual at all.
And part of the populism momentum, obviously, in the United States had to do with the ongoing immigration conversation, still in the headlines, trying to figure out the border here. But figuring out the borders of the European Union and immigration is also a really important topic of conversation that is even leading a bit to the decline in power of Angela Merkel, the Germany chancellor. She's under quite a bit of attack going on right now, right?
She's under great pressure because her coalition partner, the Christian Socialist Union of Bavaria, headed by a man called Seehofer, I should say, his position in her cabinet is the interior ministry, so he's responsible for migration policies or immigration policies. And he has threatened to absolutely seal up the German border as of tonight, not allowing anybody to come in under any circumstances. And the two of them are going to meet apparently today and try to come to terms with this standoff. But of course, as you know, the European Union had a summit last week in which they also were dealing with migration issues. And you had there a sort of setup of conservative anti-migrant countries like Austria and Hungary really not wanting anybody to tell them how many migrants they should allow in, certainly not wanting the EU to tell them. And you had the sort of establishment EU leadership of President Macron of France and Angela Merkel saying, hold on, guys, we have responsibility to enact humane policies towards migrants to Europe because we're a decent people. We have traditions of human rights and so on. So they are trying to set up a system where migrants who have not been allowed in specifically to any European country but are waiting for approval of their application can be located in different parts of the European continent or different countries of the EU. And unfortunately, this is probably not going to get anywhere very fast because they want the contributions to be volunteered by the member states of the EU. And there really isn't a whole lot of willingness to do that.
Yeah, the global immigration conversation seems to resist any one silver bullet answer. It's going to be tricky and complex for quite a while ahead, I think. This is Dr. David Aikman, our foreign affairs correspondent here on Faith Radio Mornings. We'll take a short break, David, and when we come back, we'd love to get into the recent conversation in North Korea that maybe, shockingly, they're not getting rid of their nuclear weapons just as fast as we might like. Take a short break and be back with Dr. David Aikman. It is 9 minutes before the top of the hour. It's Faith Radio Mornings. I'm your host, Dr. Peter Kapsner. We're joined, as we always are on Mondays, by Dr. David Aikman, our foreign affairs correspondent. And David, North Korea obviously continues to be in the headlines. And post the summit with President Trump, there was even some headlines around the idea they were getting rid of some of their anti-American propaganda. It looked hopeful. But now over the weekend, we see again that perhaps they're actually still building onto their nuclear test site, that they're not doing what it is that they said they might do. But that's part of the history of these conversations, right?
Well, yes. But, I mean, it's disturbing in that satellite imagery has shown that the North Koreans seem to have moved their nuclear sort of development facilities around the original test site where they had them. And this is an ominous development because we had the impression after the explosions in the nuclear testing locations that were heavily publicized and had television crews from the West going in, that this stuff had come to an end. So although it's nice that the anti-American propaganda has receded somewhat, it's rather ominous that they appear to be keeping control of their nuclear options.
And how will the president respond to this? Because he made it very clear post-summit that there was, quote, no threat from North Korean nuclear missiles. What, how do we move forward from here?
Well, I don't know. It's difficult to know what he was specifically told by Kim Jong-un that would reassure him that everything was going ahead, as indicated in the joint statement that he and Chairman Kim signed. Obviously, American has satellite intelligence that would indicate if there any serious change in the disposition of North Korean nuclear facilities was proceeding. And, you know, nobody from the administration has confirmed that. So I don't know how he's going to play it in response, because a lot of people are going to be saying, Mr. President, what's going on that we can see from space is contradictory to the sense of goodwill that you brought back from the Singapore summit. So we'll have to see.
And with South Korea, obviously, we have a presence there in the, as the United States, as sort of this deterrence. And I know President Trump was talking about the costs involved with that, and he wanted to pull some of our forces out of South Korea. I've got to believe that's on hold at this point until this matter is cleared up.
Yes, I don't think he made any specific indication that he would pull out troops from South Korea. All he did say was that he would not pursue continuing South Korean U.S. military exercises and cooperation. That did not sort of develop into a specific commitment to removing U.S. troops from the peninsula. So I don't know how he's going to respond. We'll have to see. We'll have to wait to find out.
And Dr. Eggman, I can't let you go this morning without at least asking about Brexit. You're sort of at ground zero of the UK leaving the European Union. We'd love to hear just your eyes and ears on what's happening and some of the latest updates for Brexit.
Well, you couldn't design a more dramatic Brexit political situation in England if you were a novelist, because what's going on basically is that the anti-Brexit people, the so-called Remainers, are very agitated over the deal that they think Theresa May is going to present in due course to Mr. Barnier of the European Council, which will be the European side of negotiations over Brexit. Meanwhile, her most ardent Brexiteers, notably Foreign Secretary Boris Johnson, are pushing hard for moves and proposals in the UK-EU agreement, which will settle the conditions of Britain's departure in as rock solid as they can be. And of course, one of the most troubling issues is what to do about the Irish border, because Northern Ireland is part of the UK. And when the UK leaves the EU, technically there will not be any relationship between not only Northern Ireland and the EU, but in fact, the Republic of Ireland. And the Republic of Ireland, the independent country, is very annoyed at the possibility that there will be the redeployment of hard border security fences and inspections between the two countries. So the Southern Irish, the Irish Republic, whose Prime Minister is Liam Varadkar, is really annoyed that the British don't seem to have come up with a response to the border issue that satisfied the Republic of Ireland.
It's fascinating to watch. Thank you again for joining us each week and talking us through these global headlines, Dr. Aikman. Enjoy the barbecue here in a couple of days, and we'll catch you next week.
All right. Thank you so much, Peter. You have a great week, too.
Take a short break and wrap up our show. You know, Paul, what I think is clear from today's show is that Logan needs to spend his afternoon reading the Declaration of Independence.
Oh, definitely, definitely. I don't know if he can handle all those big words, though.
Yeah, do I have to go to a library for that? I'm not good at those.
You might have to, Logan.
On the internet, dude.
Oh, okay, good. That's good. You have to learn how to pronounce Northwestern.
Oh, instead of Northwestern.
Northwestern.
Will you just please say Dr. Peter Kapsner really
quick? Dr. Peter Kapsner.
Now I feel much better about myself. Thanks for listening, everybody. It's Faith Radio Mornings. The tomb is empty. We'll catch you in the morning.
Again, thanks for listening to this podcast of Faith Radio Mornings. You can hear other podcasts at myfaithradio.com. Plus, remember, we are listener-supported, so your support makes Faith Radio Mornings and the other programs from Faith Radio possible. Make your gift at myfaithradio.com.